Donald on the Kitchen talks about food. Donald on the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald on the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctico.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
And this is the Donald on the Kitchen. We gather here once a week at the studios of KHOI Community Radio. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. The Donald on Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. For information, you can go to themuckyduckpub.com or call the pub and just ask for Marcus.
The following is a revived, repurposed, and rerun Donald on a Kitchen Show. We got into our archives and put together a show about winter and being warm and eating warm things. And this show originally aired in January and February of 2017. And it needs to be run again. So enjoy our show. On this show, we talk about food, farming, recipes, advice, opinions. We appreciate the support we receive from many of you listeners. Ah, yes, support local, eat local, and enjoy this locally grown radio program. Donald on the Kitchen comes to you every Tuesday at noon on KHOI FM, this fine community radio station. And we get by with help from volunteers of all sorts, and we encourage your membership. Membership makes it happen here. This is a community-supported radio station. For more information on membership and all the fine shows that you can find here, go to khoifm.org. Cold weather. Time for our thoughts to go to warm winter comfort food. Let's think soup. After the feasting and fuss we enjoyed over the holidays, it feels good to slow down a bit. Put on a pot on the stove and watch the winter from the inside out for a while. Also, let's take a look out of that kitchen window and consider all the animals that go on about their lives outside all year long. Even when the thermometer heads far below zero. How in the world do they do it? And yet, there they are. Birds at the bird feeder, squirrels, fox, deer, raccoons, coyotes. I live just north and west of Ames here in central Iowa. And my January sky has a wonderful new blessing in it. This fall, I first noticed really, really big bird in the sky, and I saw a bald eagle. And just this week, I've seen two of them. What a surprise. Yeah, I'm sure they were too big to be red-tailed hawks. They had an impressive wingspan, and I did the positive ID of white heads and tails on both of them. Making big lazy loops in that brilliant winter blue sky, a lovely thing to see. So, while we stay inside and enjoy the warmth of the kitchen, let's think about the wild creatures that live around us. Over the past year, I got to know a young woman who listens to and writes well about animals. She shared some of her poems with me. Megan Brown is a writer of poetry and nonfiction and also an anthrozoologist who studies animals and studies animal-related subcultures and animal protection issues. She is a native of Colorado and North Dakota, so she knows a thing about cold. Yes, she does. She called Central Iowa home for a short while as she completed her Master of Fine Arts degree in Creative Writing and the Environment at Iowa State University. I talked with her last summer. She reads two of her poems. The first is about coyotes, specifically urban coyotes, and the second poem is called Migration. And I'm here at my kitchen table with Megan Brown.
This is a poem called Urban Coyotes Never Stray, New Study Finds. And there's an epigraph that says, Scientists who genetically sampled 236 coyotes in the Chicago area over a six-year period found no evidence of polygamy, of the animals having more than one mate, nor of one mate ever leaving another while the other was still alive. And that's from Kurt Nimbusch from the Ohio State University Research and Innovations Communications. Nursing their own divorces, scarred hearts, straying eyes, the researchers veered from language of romance, never mentioned devotion, spoke instead of mating systems, his clear genetic stake in his offspring, her need for provisioning, territory defense. They swagger midnight alleys, exchange wary looks with shivery backyard dogs, dodge eight lanes of traffic together. What but fierce certainty could temper such dangerous lives? Once in a while, our streets are theirs. After the blizzard, Chicagoans wake up to their stilled city, gaze from stoops and fire escapes, discover parallel paths crossing crisp white drifts, where, before dawn, the lovers in sodium spotlights danced, pas de deux adagio, past the snow-stayed cars. Migration. Dazzling snow swirled from purple sky. I held out my tongue for delicate white flake of paper cold from the glove box. Compass needle spinning, I fold several times inward. The animals came from the north, bodies alight with stars. Caribou, whose branching antlers cradle the universe. Wolf, who makes tracks in snow, same size as my hand. Smoldering raven, who circles within wolf's lantern eye. Moose, draped in moss, who fights hard in deep current until he turns, allows the river to carry him away. And snow goose, with kind dark eyes, who says, the hardest part isn't learning how to fly, it's knowing where to go.
You have the concern and the understanding of animals as a basis of a lot of the things that you write about. What's your connection with them?
I loved animals from beyond a time that I can remember. I grew up with animals in my family as friends and family members. My mother taught me that animals aren't people, but they are nations in their own right, and they deserve respect, and they deserve our admiration and our understanding. And I try to live my life and create my art on behalf of animals on a daily basis. I'm in awe of what they know and constantly wondering about the mysteries about them that we have yet to discover.
You've spent time studying writing here at Iowa State University. How did that affect what you have written about animals?
I had the privilege of studying with two very gifted writers, one of them being Mary Swander, who's the current Poet Laureate of Iowa, and Deborah Marquardt, who's author of Horizontal World, Growing Up Wild in the Middle of Nowhere. This was a very rich environment and an encouraging environment to study the environment through our emissaries to the environment, which are the animals that we live with, but also the animals that we encounter and the animals that act as bridges and vehicles into the environment. So animals really, in my work, function as bridges and emissaries and vehicles into the natural world and the unnatural world.
That was a little bit of wisdom about animals and animals in winter from poet and writer Megan Brown. You are listening to KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. It's time for soup. Over the past year or so, I've learned how to make stock, and I learned about how to make stock from listening to this radio program. Donna Prisgintis has taught me a lot about cooking and don't waste things and use those things that are left over and make yourself some really good soup stock. So, from a fine Christmas duck dinner that I made a couple weeks ago. I made use of those leftover bones. Took what was left of the duck, and there wasn't too much left, just a lot of the bones and some of the skin, and boiled it down, cooked it down with a little bay leaf and some onion and celery and carrot. Let that simmer and simmer. Ended up with duck soup. That was quite tasty. It's very much like chicken soup. I turned that stock into a noodle soup, because I do love chicken noodle soup, but this was duck noodle soup. It is very much like chicken, but the stock and leftover bits of duck made this soup very rich and satisfying. As you might know, ducks have a lot more body fat and more fat to them than a chicken does, and which means the soup was quite tasty. Hint, I added a squeeze of lime to this duck noodle soup, and that made it really good. The lime cuts the oiliness of it if you don't care for it, but it just brings out, it enlivens flavor. So think of chicken soup with a dash of lime or duck soup with a dash of lime in it. It just does fine things for it. A real winter warmer. Also, this past weekend, I went to the Iowa Arboretum. It's south of Boone near Madrid. It's just west of Luther, Iowa. It's a beautiful place to visit any time of year. But last Sunday, the Arboretum hosted a hibernation celebration. It was an afternoon in the visitor's center that included yoga, bird watching through the window, or walks outside if you'd like to, and come back in for family games, craft activities, and some fine food. Gabrielle and Joe Rosh McNally were there. Joe is on staff there at the Iowa Arboretum, and Gabrielle knows her way around the kitchen. They made a fine pot of pumpkin soup, and I asked Gabrielle for the recipe. This pumpkin soup was especially tasty because it was served with a crisp and tart cranberry apple chutney. Kind of like the lime. You have your basic soup, but boy, there was this other taste that was put in there. It was real, real fine. This is the recipe that Gabrielle gave me. It's called pumpkin soup with chutney. First, she says, roast your pumpkin 4 cups. So you get 4 cups mashed pumpkin or squash. And you could use a can, but there's lots of squash around now. And it's really good to get that little oven roasting in there. So 4 cups pumpkin, 4 cups chicken or veggie stock, 1 cup whole cream or half and half, you add that later, 2 tablespoons butter, 2 tablespoons olive oil, salt and pepper, celery, onion, garlic. And the herbs are nutmeg, parsley, thyme, and cayenne. So you roast your pumpkin, and in a soup pot, saute the onion, celery, garlic, and in the olive oil and butter until translucent. Add all the herbs, add the mashed pumpkin and stock. And you warm that up. And if you have an immersion blender, you can use that to good effect right there. And mix it all up. Get it hot, simmer. Add the cream. Don't boil it after this, but add the cream, a little salt and pepper to taste. There you have, your soup is ready. And before the soup gets ready, you might want to either do this first or while the soup is warming. You can make the chutney. 1 apple, 1/4 cup fresh cranberries, diced, 1/2 teaspoon of lemon, orange zest, 2 tablespoons of honey, salt and pepper to taste, and optional fresh ginger grated. So all of that in a bowl, toss that. And that was a really fine addition to the top of that soup. Nice, sweet, and crunchy. There were also some green onions there on the side if you'd like to add it. That was a very fine way to warm up. And thanks to Gabrielle and Joe Rosh McNally for that soup recipe. I believe we could put that on the website. I'll get around to it, talk to our webmaster, Ron Carson? Sure, we can do that. We can do that. So that was pumpkin soup with chutney. And if you want to find out more about the Iowa Arboretum and their next hibernation celebration, which is coming up February 14th, you can go to info@iowaarboretum.org. You are listening to KHOI 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. We're talking soup today, winter comfort food at its best. This next segment is taken from a past Donna Lana Kitchen show, from the January 2014 show. And we talked about soup and winter things, Donna and I. Yes, we did. I found it in the Donna Lana Kitchen Archives. Can you believe it? We've been doing this show since December 2013. Back then, Donna and I were reluctantly urged to get on the radio and talk about Christmas cookies. Who would have thought we'd still be at it today? And we are. But boy, have things changed since then. Back then, KHOI was broadcasting from a table set up in the front window of the Ames Pantorium building. It still looked a lot like a dry cleaner's then. The shows are recorded with the background noise of volunteer chatter and the front door opening and closing and the sound of road construction and an occasional beer truck in the alley. The radio station was at the Let's Dream Big stage at that time, and lots of work has been done by the, now, and volunteers do make it happen around here. We have a real studio, thanks to you, the listener, and members. Thank you for your support. So, soup. Beans. Beans can be soup. We'll talk about beans first. Beans for soup. And of course, also because this is the season of seed catalogs and dreaming about summer gardens, we'll talk about green beans and shell beans, too. Donna, would you have any words of wisdom about beans?
Well, my first basic premise is don't buy them in cans. Just cook them. And it's all about timing. Sometimes I cover them up with water before I go to bed, drain them off in the morning. That shortens the cooking time. There's all these things about beans and gas, right?
Oh, I've heard that, yes.
Yeah. So I do various things that I'm not sure if it's even a... It doesn't hurt, let's say that. So I change the... sometimes I do, after I've soaked them, then I put them in fresh water, then I bring them to a boil, then I pour the water off because some people say that helps, and then I restart them over again, or sometimes I add epazote.
Oh, epazote. I've heard of it. That's something one can grow in one's garden?
I think it would grow around here.
Or you can get it. It's an herb, right?
It's a leafy green herb, and I started using it in Southern California because it kind of grows wild everywhere, like the way lemon balm does around here, But you can buy it, and it has a little flavor, but it's not terribly flavor-changing. Oh, I've also heard that putting a piece of kombu in it will break it down as well. None of these things I can guarantee you. These are just acquired wisdoms that don't hurt.
Right. That's to take away the fear of beans. Beans are a wonderful thing to have as a ingredient in soup or just to eat as beans. But there's beans are usually terribly plentiful along about midsummer. Beans exist either as green beans, shell beans, or dry beans. Donna was talking about dry beans because this is the time of the year when you've got dry beans. Green beans are the wonderful green things we find in the summer, and everyone enjoys green beans. You notice there's if you break open a green bean, there's not much little seed pod in the inside. Although they're growing. That's the idea. That's where they come from. You eat the whole pod for green beans. Shell beans are in between the green stage and the dry bean stage. Shell beans are shelled out of the pod just as the pod becomes dry. I've, over the past years in my garden, started growing beans that I can use as shell beans and then also use as dry beans. So catching them about halfway through, you get beans that look like dry beans, but they're a little soft. You can puncture them with your thumbnail.
Plus they cook a lot faster.
In other words, they have a lot of moisture left in. At this stage, just when the pods are dry in your garden and the pods are full, you can feel them. You can get these shell beans out of the pots.
Want to mention some varieties of shell beans?
Sure. The two varieties that I have grown successfully are the cranberry bean, and there's lots of different kinds of cranberry beans. There's speckled cranberry beans, Vermont cranberry beans, true red cranberry beans. You can find them in seed catalogs, usually right next to the ones that are called green beans, and they're called shell beans or dry beans. And I've had really good luck with the cranberry beans. Also, these are a pinkish, reddish bean. The true red cranberry bean is very red.
Like just a kidney bean or something?
Like a kidney bean, a little smaller. The speckled cranberry bean, or the Vermont cranberry bean, is a little speckledy, and they're very pretty. They're pinkish and reddish speckled, and they're lovely. They either use as a dry bean and they're a little softer pink, or they dry down to a darker red and keep a very long time too. I was thinking of beans because I was shelling my cranberry beans during the New Year's Eve or New Year's Day rebroadcast of the Vienna Philharmonic New Year's Day Johann Strauss waltz program, and somehow the beans hitting my bowl, going plink 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 plink. It just worked so nicely. It was a nice way to start the new year. I think
Lana is recommending that you shell beans to a waltz. Is that true?
It's quite nice. It's a nice It's a long, long process. It's like knitting or anything else. Sit in front of a masterpiece theater or something.
You know, I can remember my grandmother and those of her generation, once they got, you know, kind of too elderly to be up and about that much, though, they were always sitting in some kind of rocking chair with their hands, either shelling beans or, well, certainly tatting and crocheting, but mostly things like pitting cherries and cutting, you know, always something with the hands. Busy, 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 busy.
It's a nice thing to do with your hands because you don't have to think too hard. And you look down after a little while and you've got a whole bowl full of these good things. And the husks that are left over all go under my chicken. So it's part of chicken bedding, too. You never waste.
You know what I think? And sometimes when my brain is all muddled and I have some, like, major problem to solve, I always go into the kitchen and start cooking something, because when my hands are busy, I think my brain processes better.
Oh, I think so too.
So we recommend shelling beans for your sanity. How about that?
That's good. That's a little thing you can do.
We were going to talk about these beans. I was in France last summer, and there was this very sweet little old lady who was quite interested in the fact that I was a chef, and she kept wanting to serve me local delicacies. So she went down into her freezer and produced this bag called Coco de Pampelais, because it was in Pampal, which is on the coast of Brittany, and it's a very, well, like most regions in France or anywhere else, they're very distinct in their cultural traditions. So this was a bean that was only grown in that part of the country, and it actually even had a restricted name. For example, only the families that traditionally have grown this bean are allowed to sell them as the true cocoa beans, and they come at a certain time of year, and they are of the variety where you let them dry and you pick them, but you eat them right away. So there's a season, like a 6-week season. It's very cherished. People really look forward to it. So she had shelled these and frozen a little bag, and she told me how to cook them with lots of carrots and onions. And I have to say, they were absolutely, perhaps, the best bean I'd ever tasted. So I brought home a package that Lana's going to try and grow this year, and we'll see. But I noticed when I went to the store to try to buy the beans, you cannot actually buy them. On the package, it says type Pampelais, which means it's not the authentic one named as the Pampal de Coco de Pampal. But every place has their bean. What do we have? Like in the South, there's a
Vidalia onions.
Oh, yeah. Or butter beans come up in Virginia and in North Carolina, and everyone rushes to the market because there's only a season for them. And it's, you know, it's rather like the AOC of wines, you know.
That sounds good. And is this the spelling of?
Well, it's in French. C-O-C-A-G-N-E, Cocagne, du Pampelais. Right. So Pampal is the name of the town. So it's very geographically specific. Other kinds of beans that we wanted to be sure to mention were lentils, all the pulses, red lentils, which are very quick to cook. Brown lentils take a little bit longer. Then there's split peas, yellow and green. And all of these things make wonderful bases for soups.
Great. And before we move on to soups, I think we should take a little time for a little bit of culture in our story here. I have got a book of poems by humorist and poet Roy Blunt Jr., and he wrote a whole bunch of songs to food. And this is his song to beans. Here goes. Boston baked green, red navy lima, pinto black butter, kidney string, I'm a person who leans towards all kinds of beans. I hope that plenty of farmers sow 'em. You're not anywhere till you know 'em. No accident beans. In common speech means, well, are you anything other than prim? Have your kinness, spirit, vim?
Can you make all kinds of scenes? Then we say you're full of beans. Eat no beans, Pythagoras said. Where was his head?
That was a little thought on beans. And beans get turned into soup. Once Donna gets talking about a subject, she can go on, and she's got lots to say about soup.
One of my favorite bean soups, aside from chili, which I'm sure everybody has their own version of, that wonderful, ubiquitous, warming winter food, is a white bean, or some people call them cannellini, not to be mistaken for lima beans, which are delicious on their own right, but they produce a very different thing. So I do a white bean soup where I cook the beans from scratch, and then throw in some onions, and then you can either cook them till they're really, really, really soft and discreet, or you can puree them if you like, and you can put chicken stock in if you want, or some such like that. But the deep flavoring of it is brown butter sage. So this is the brown butter sage idea. You take butter, and you can either clarify it, which is best because you are going to burn it, kind of. So clarifying butter simply means you melt it and you kind of pour off the white bits. Or you can buy ghee. What it is you're getting to just oil with no dairy in it. Of course, sometimes I don't bother doing that. I just throw the butter in the pan.
How much butter?
As much as you want.
Okay.
Depends on how much sage and how many beans, but be generous. So, but the basic thing is to make brown butter sage is you take the whole leaf of the sage, not the stem, just the leaf, of fresh sage, which you can usually buy at the market any time of year.
Or it is one of those things that can grow pretty well in a pot on your windowsill. So,
and it's perennial, isn't it?
It's a perennial.
Does yours last through the winter here?
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. No, not outside. I tend to move them into
the
greenhouse.
Okay. So you take those little nicely smelling sage leaves and you cook them in the butter till they actually turn black. They're not burned.
Black.
You know, they go through brown, they wither, they keep going as far as you can push them without the whole thing like completely going up in smoke. And then you take all that butter and all those leaves and you stir them into, they'll be brittle, so you can crush them or you can put them in the soup and puree them. Or they're also really good if your soup is not a soup, you can make a mixed bean dip out of it. Like a hummus, only with white beans. And, oh yes, of course, you have to cook some garlic into the beans. So you could have a white bean dip, or you can have a soup. And you just kind of stir it in, and the flavor. Oh, and it also works really well with a little squash. Brown butter sage and squash, or pasta dishes are really. It's a kind of traditional Italian. Goes well with light tomato stuff like that. So, you know what else we didn't mention about beans is hummus.
Oh, good. Yeah, Glenn. Hummus sounds great.
I'm not a fan of the ubiquitous hummus that we buy because most of it is not. I think profoundly flavored enough. So cooking chickpeas is actually really, really easy. I often cook a bunch and then kind of bag them up and freeze them so I can make a fresh hummus very easily. Fresh hummus, the classic is in the blender, is hummus, olive oil, tahini, lemon juice, garlic, and salt and pepper. Obviously, you can add a lot of other things to that, like some of Lana's famous dried tomatoes. I like to put in preserved lemons, which we'll have to do a whole show about preserved lemons.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it's really delicious. So, anyway, I would encourage you to eat your beans. It's a great roughage and
good for your heart.
And protein dense.
Oh, very.
Yeah.
There's something about beans this time of year, also done in a crock pot. You can cook them slow, and you feel like you've really eaten something.
Yeah, and it's like so easy. You put them on and forget about them. That's my favorite thing. So,
another little aside about beans in a crock pot. Any of these kind of beans can work. Finding some
really nice bacon or ham to flavor your slow-cooked beans is real fun. And here we are in the middle of Iowa. Find yourself a really good pig farmer. Yes. There's some really fine bacon that is out there. All kinds. And you don't need much, but that bit of flavor, it's one of my favorites. So there we have it.
Now, we were going to talk about the difference between soup and stew. As far as I know, it has to do with how thick it is. But I was cleaning out the freezer. So I found some nice smoked ham hocks from Cindy Madsen, who is a local Iowa grower. And I also had an oxtail, which is cowtail, basically.
Actually, I'm going to read Merriam-Webster's definition of soup, and then we'll go to a song, and then we'll talk about oxtails. Because that was my question. Exactly, where does one find all these oxes? But first off, the definition of soup. Soup, number one, a liquid food with stock at its base and often containing pieces of solid food. Number two, something having the consistency of soup. Number three, an unfortunate predicament. And that really truly is what it says in the Merriam-Webster dictionary that I have, so that's fine. Let's go to, there's a song I'd like to share with you. It's called Bull at the Wagon by the Barn Owl Band, so let's go into that. Wagon. Bull at the Wagon has a tail. And
T-A-I-L.
Yeah, T-A-I-L. Right. We're going to talk about a little about oxtails because I've heard of that a lot and it always sounded good. And like Donna mentioned, it makes really good soup. And I assume that that really truly means the tail. With all of the other meat on a cow, why the tail?
Well, the tail has, of course, vertebrae in it. And each of the little vertebrae has a lot of cartilage and that sort of thing. So when you cook it in a liquid or a long, slow cook, all of those things kind of come out and they're very unctuous. They thicken the stew. They're very rich. Sometimes people will leave, I take all the bones out once it's cooked off the meat, but sometimes people will leave the little oogie bits in the plate, you know. But I have to say, if you eat those are what have joint building things in them, and they're very, very healthy. So I encourage us to get over our they say the conscious way to, if you're going to kill an animal and take its life, it would be incumbent upon us to fully utilize the whole beast. So there's like a book called Using the Nasty Bits, which of course are not nasty. They're very, very delicious. So oxtails are a good example. After all, they're rare. Every cow only has one. And they do make a good super stew just for that reason.
Sounds good. Using everything from snout to tail sounds like a very
good thing. That's right.
So, talk about starting out soups.
Well, first of all, I'm going to get back to your definition because, of course, I'm so stuck in the culinary thing that the third definition of soup is being an unfortunate predicament. Here's where my mind went. When you have a bunch of stuff you don't know what to do with, that's an unfortunate predicament, and you throw it all in the soup. Now, that was my brain being really, really literal there. But soup is kind of good for that. You know, you can mix and match all kinds of things.
Wonderful way to clean out your refrigerator
and or freezer,
and it all ends up good. All right. Soup.
Bases of soup. Okay, there's the usual stock. The easiest one, I think, is chicken stock. I know we've talked about this before, so I'll go over it very quickly. I just throw the whole chicken in a pot with water and bay leaves and nothing more and cook it when the meat comes off. About 45 minutes in, unless it's an old chicken, I pull the whole thing out, let it cool, and take the meat off, put all the bones and the skin and the bits and the feet, if you have them, should go back in. And then I just keep cooking on a slow boil. So chicken stock is very easy to make. Beef stock, I wish I knew the chemistry, but you actually roast the beans, the bones first, and then put them in the stock with bay leaves again, according to me, and cook that for a long time. I will often simmer these soups overnight, or a crock pot is a good way to do it. Just put it on and forget about it, except that your whole house starts to smell really heavenly.
You won't forget about it.
No, you won't. Other soup bases, coconut milk for Asian-flavored ones, and curry. Of course, there are vegetable stocks, too. I tend not, I have to say, my personal admission here is there's only one bought stock prepared that I use, and that is it's a mushroom broth. It comes in an aseptic package, and it's called Pacific something or other, and that actually has enough flavor that I think it's worth getting. Generally, if you buy a chicken stock, or heaven forbids, you should use a bouillon cube. They have other things in them that, like, hydrolyzed protein and stuff like that, and none of those things really give you the flavor you want. So I'm sort of want to really encourage everybody. Making stock is not only it's thrifty, it's delicious, it's certainly more health-giving than anything you buy. Other bases, miso, which is fermented soybeans and sometimes other beans. There's light miso, dark miso. Now, miso is generally a living thing. So sometimes what you want to do is boil your water, make your soup, and then as it starts to cool down enough to eat it, you kind of thin your miso with water and stir it into the soup. That way, I mean, if you want all the live probiotic benefits of it. If you don't care and you just want it for a flavor, put it in any old time.
Miso is something that one purchases at a store?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I suppose if we were really ingenious and, you know, we could make our own and people do it, but not too much around here. It's an Asian thing. Other soup bases, obviously tomatoes. Canned tomatoes make great soup bases. A really simple thing that I do, like, was I would just take some water, a couple bay leaves, some potatoes, kind of roughly, you know, not whole, so they cook faster, some onions, and I just put it in and cook it until the vegetables softened and pulled out the bay leaves, put it in the food processor or the blender or using an immersion blender, which is really handy with soups, and then I just make a puree out of it with milk or cream. Now, you can do that with cauliflower. You can make a cream of carrot soup. There's any number of vegetables. Well, turnips are a little dominating, but you could use celery root, rutabaga, potatoes. carrots. Another kind of soup that I have been particularly fond of lately is rice congee. So that's, I first had that in Hong Kong.
Oh, and lovely. Spell congee.
C-O-N-G-E-E, oh. I do believe. So it's made with stock, either chicken or beef, and you boil the rice. Now, I think the traditional one is probably white rice, but I actually use short grain brown rice. And I boil it, and, well, simmer it until it's like oatmeal-ish, very, very soft and soupy. And you can make this as thick or thin as you want. I'll have a pot of that in the fridge, and then I'll take it out and warm it up, and then into it you can drop all kinds of things like bacon bits, scallions, cilantro. You know, you could cook vegetables into it. You can, you know, spice it up, put something hot in it.
So we're talking about, like, serving, drizzling in individual little cups or individual little bowls. Speaking of serving, is it take away from the left and serve from the right, or take away from the right and serve from the left?
Here's how I always remember. RR, remove from the right, which means you serve from the left.
Serve from the left, remove from the right.
Right.
That is probably very important, since we're trying to add a little bit of culture here to the middle of Iowa. And everyone is watching that Downton Abbey show where everyone is served. So remember, it's serve from the left and take away from the right.
And we should talk about bowls, too, the proper bowls for soup. The concept is that the larger and flatter the bowl, the more quickly the soup will cool. So if you're doing a soupy, stewy, thick with hot bits in it, you might want to use a flatter, not a flat plate, obviously, but one
shallow.
A shallow, broader bowl. And if you're doing something a little that might cool off too quickly, you use a deeper cup, because the less exposure the top has to the air, supposedly that will maintain the temperature a little bit more.
Ah, anyway. Serve from the left, take away from the right. Got it.
And there's one other bit of etiquette.
Etiquette.
Little boats go out to sea. What does that mean? This is what I was told as a child, okay? That means you take your spoon, your soup spoon, and you put it in the soup closest to you and take it away from you to fill it up. Now, of course, I'm quite guilty of not doing that. But the reason behind that is, as you lift your soup spoon out of the soup, it's more likely to drip in the bowl than down the front of your dress. So little boats go out to sea.
Lovely. I remember that as advice, but I never had the bit of poetry to go with it, and now I know. That's good.
Ah, soup. Serve from the left, remove from the right. All that information about soup was a reheated show from our archives. It was just as good the second time around. You can find out more about this show and more about this fine radio station. You can go to khoifm.org. You can visit the Donna Lana Kitchen page. There's archives of past shows, recipes. This show comes to you live at noon every Tuesday, repeated at 7 p.m. Tuesday. If you have a comment, advice, a recipe, or an idea for a future show, we'd love to hear from you. Let us know. Contact us at khoiradio@gmail.com or call 292-2878 or stop in 410 Douglas Avenue at Ames. Look in Ames, downtown Ames, Douglas Avenue. Look for the Ames Pantorium sign. We're in that old building, and that sign is just really, really dandy. I have a little item here to include. I like to read. Here's a book about food I read recently, and it's a light read. You'll enjoy it. It's called Kitchens of the Great Midwest, a novel by J. Ryan Stradel. He was born and raised in Minnesota, and he lives in Los Angeles now. He edits fiction for The Nervous Breakdown. I don't know what that is. Is that a book? Is that? I haven't known, but it's good. And works as an acquisition editor for the Unnamed Press. This is his first novel. It's an enjoyable read with slightly snarky, food-loving characters, and this book is set in the American heartland. It has a sweeping, vast landscape, including Lutheran church bake-offs, chili pepper eating contests, farmers markets, and the opening of deer season. This does a good job of capturing the flavor of Midwest food culture, all wrapped up around the story of family, love, regret, and human resilience. Recipes are included. This story visits the kitchens of Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and ends up with a gourmet dinner on the plains of North Dakota. I found this one at the Ames Public Library. So this is called The Kitchens of the Great Midwest, a novel by J. Ryan Stradal. Stradal, S-T-R-A-D-A-L, Viking Press. Like I said, we've been talking about soups today. We've got a bit of winter ahead of us, and soup is a fine thing, not only to use up all of the things that are in your kitchen, or they're fun to cook, but they're also a real easy way to make a pot of something and invite your friends and neighbors in, have them bring a loaf of bread or something. It's a real fine way to share a meal and have some good conversation at the same time. Today, we've been talking winter comfort food. We have talked about duck noodle soup, pumpkin soup, bean soup, oxtail soup, miso, and congee. Donna told us that the congee soup is a rice-based soup. It sounded good, too. And we had some handy rules of soup etiquette from Donna Prisgintis. Donna Prisgintis is still away down under in New Zealand. Wish her the best down there. I'm sure she's listening to this program. You can get this program anywhere, all over the world. Go to the internet, khoifm.org. A lot of the stuff here is streaming. Okay, go to khoifm.org and find the magic donate button on that page. Become a member. It helps us along here. We are all volunteers. This is community radio. So we talked soup today. And we heard some original poems by Megan Brown. You've heard music by Karen Ashbrook on the flute and hammered dulcimer from the CD called Knock on the Door. Also, we had some music from the Barn Owl Band from their live CD. They played Bull at the Wagon. This is community radio. Support this fine station. We are all in this together. Thanks for joining us on the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal. We've had excellent engineering today by Rick Morrison. Eat good food and enjoy life.